Welcome to today's episode. In this episode, we hear Amina's story, a story about displacement, loneliness, trust, control, and the slow process of rebuilding independence. Amina grew up in a small city in northern Syria. She was a primary school teacher who loved her work, her neighbourhood, and the routines that gave structure to her life. But when conflict reached her city, everything changed. Her school was damaged, her street became unsafe, and the life she knew disappeared within months. Her brother, Tariq, had already settled in Malmö, Sweden. One evening, he called her and said,
"Come now, Amina, while you still can."
Amina packed what she could and left with her daughter. She arrived in Malmö during winter. She did not speak Swedish. She knew very few people. Apart from her brother, she was largely alone. She was placed in an apartment in Rosengård. It felt unfamiliar at first, but slowly she began building a new life. She enrolled in SFI classes. She took her daughter to the local playground. She started learning the rhythms of a new city. It was through Tariq that she met Khalid. Like Amina, he was Syrian. He had lived in Malmö for several years and knew how to navigate life in Sweden. He understood the language, the systems, the paperwork, and the everyday challenges newcomers often face. Amina trusted him, and soon they became close.
He made me feel less alone. He knew Syria. He knew what we had lost. With him, I didn't have to explain everything from the beginning.
After several months, they became a couple. For the first time since leaving Syria, Amina felt she had someone to share life with. Someone who understood her experiences. Someone she believed she could build a future with. But gradually, things began to change. Not suddenly, not dramatically. The changes arrived quietly. At first, Khalid offered practical help. He helped her set up her bank ID. He said Swedish systems could be confusing and that he wanted to prevent mistakes. Amina accepted.
In the beginning, he said he just wanted to help me. So he kept my passwords. I thought, maybe that's normal.
Over time, he gained access to more than passwords. He managed her messages, her social media accounts, her email. Each action came with an explanation. Each decision was presented as protection.
"I'll take care of it. You don't need to worry."
At first, Amina believed him. She was still learning the language, still learning the country. It seemed reasonable to trust someone who appeared more experienced. But little by little, her world became smaller. When she wanted to contact a woman from her SFI class, Khalid discouraged her. When she wanted to join an online Swedish course, he told her it would be too difficult. Slowly, she began questioning herself.
"When I wanted to message a woman from my SFI class, he said she was a bad influence. When I wanted to join an online Swedish course, he said it was too confusing for me. I started doubting myself."
Sometimes she visited Malmö Stadsbibliotek to use the computers. But Khalid insisted on accompanying her. He sat beside her, watched her screen, monitored what she was doing.
"I felt like a child, like I wasn't allowed to make mistakes or choices."
Eventually, she stopped talking about the things she wanted, stopped asking questions, stopped making plans. She became quieter, not only around others, but within herself. She felt trapped, but struggled to explain why. Far away from her mother and sisters, she lacked the support network she once relied on. The isolation made the situation harder to recognize and harder to talk about. Even her brother, Tariq, did not see what was happening. In front of him, Khalid always appeared respectful, calm, and supportive.
"I didn't want to worry my brother. And part of me still thought, maybe this is my fault. Maybe I'm too sensitive."
Almost 2 years passed. Then one evening, after her daughter had gone to sleep, Amina sat alone in the kitchen. Nothing dramatic happened. No argument, no crisis. Just a moment of clarity. She realized she could not remember the last time she had made a simple decision on her own. And she knew something had to change. She asked Khalid to leave. The separation was difficult. There were painful weeks, moments of doubt. But Amina remained firm in her decision. Soon after, her SFI teacher mentioned a women-only digital skills workshop in Hillia. It was free, confidential, and designed for newcomers. Amina hesitated, but something inside her encouraged her to attend.
My hands were shaking on the bus. When I walked into the room and saw other women, I felt safe for the first time in a long time.
Her mentor explains that support was never limited to completing forms or navigating administrative procedures. It also meant being present during moments of doubt, moments of exhaustion, moments when giving up seemed easier than continuing. For women who have experienced violence, exile, and isolation, mentoring can become essential. It is about listening, reassuring, explaining rights, and reminding someone that they are not alone. In Milene's case, this consistent support brought stability to a life shaped by uncertainty. Her mentor remained available, including by phone, offering encouragement and helping her continue to believe in herself and her future. Today, they still keep in contact, and her mentor describes Milene as one of the strongest women she has ever met. As we close today's episode, Milene leaves us with a final reflection.
I have lost a lot along the way, but I haven't lost the will to carry on.
Thank you for listening. Milene's story reminds us that resilience is not the absence of suffering. It is the decision to continue moving forward despite it. Her journey demonstrates the strength it can take to rebuild a life after violence, loss, exile, and repeated obstacles. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you in the next episode. Questions for reflection. How does Milene's story help us understand that violence is not limited to a single incident, but can accumulate over the course of a lifetime? What does Milene's story teach us about the strength required to rebuild one's life after exile, prostitution, violence, and administrative rejections? Why is it important, when supporting her, to see Milene not only as a victim, but also as a woman capable of resisting, making decisions, and rebuilding her future?